right, back on the Young Turks. Jamel writes in, hey Anna, by the way.
Hi.
Good to have you back.
It's good to be back.
Jamel writes in, I prefer presidential candidates who aren't under FBI investigation. Agreed. That's the same line I use in the production meeting. Thank you for reminding me of it. Daniel Pareja writes in, Democrats shouldn't worry about primary challenges from their left flank. They should welcome them if they want to hold seats. But of course, it's their seats, so they don't want any challengers. Yeah. That's why they send writers from NBC and MSNBC News to go attack real progressives. Matthew Reed says, there's a reason why Bernie is the most popular politician in the US. Mostly has to do with good policy that actually helps people. No, radical strain in the Democratic Party, according to NBC News. Rita Ann says, now that the Justice Democrats are gaining traction, the establishment is getting scared. It certainly appears that way, mm-hmm. but if you ask them, they're like, no, we're not worried about it at all. We're not worried about the primaries mm-hmm. and these mm-hmm. lunatic radical fringes. We're not worried about them, but they're radicals. Whatever you do, don't pay attention to them. They're radicals, okay? But we're not worried about them. Got a curious way of showing it. Julia Mahoney says, MSNBC's new tagline, we lean because standing is hard without a spine. Okay, now I want to go to tytnetwork.com/go. That's our journalism drive. There's only about 40 days left, and we want to get to 1.5. This week, I hope, I'd love it by tomorrow, but by Thursday, come on, guys. I want to announce the three great guys that you're going to be super, super excited about. Let's get there. This is, of course, then the mainstream media will look at this and go, they rely on their audience. How quaint. They actually care about their audience.
How dare we?
Okay. $127 from David in Ohio, $500 from Grammy in California, and $500 from Mary in Florida. Guys, that's real, real money, man. And the fact that you're willing to do that so we could hire reporters to go after Trump and the establishment, bless your hearts. Can't appreciate it enough. Okay. I don't know if you saw the last segment. I want to talk about it more in the post game too.
Okay. What were we talking about?
The NBC News guy attacking Justice Democrats and me. Okay. Anyways, let's go forward. What do you got?
All right. We begin with a pretty devastating update on a story we did earlier this year. A grand jury in North Carolina has ruled against charging a former school resource officer by the name of Ruben De Los Santos, who was caught on film body slamming a 15-year-old female student who weighs about 100 pounds. Now, we have the video for you, which is graphic, but I'm going to show it to you and then fill in the details and explain why these jurors decided not to charge this person. Take a look.
This 8-second video is shocking. A high school resource officer body slamming a 15-year-old student.
I feel, every time I look at it, like, it's embarrassing.
A second video captures the moments leading up to Tuesday's incident involving Officer Ruben De Los Santos and Jasmine Darwin. The teenager says she was trying to break up a fight between her sister and another student in the cafeteria.
So this happened at Rollsville High School in North Carolina, and the incident occurred on January 3rd. And as I mentioned, the grand jury in North Carolina decided that they will not file any charges against him. This is not the actual trial. This is just the decision of whether or not this officer deserves any charges. And so they ruled against it, saying that this wasn't proof of excessive force, even though, again, he body slammed a 15-year-old student, and it was evident in the surveillance. The grand jury could have recommended De Los Santos be charged with willful failure to discharge his duties and assault on a female, but decided Tuesday that no charges should be pursued.
Isn't that a weird charge, assault on a female? Yeah. I don't know why those
How about just assault? But yeah. I don't know. I'm sure there's some sort of legal jargon there that we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had to show you the video so that you could see the severity of it. Mm-hmm. Because if you just saw that, hey, there was a security guard or cop breaking up a fight, you really can't tell. It's a judgment call until you see it with your own eyes. And look, I'm not saying that it's an easy job. I mean, did you want to get in the middle of that fight with those girls? I didn't want to do it, right? So, but that's why we pay them their salary, to be careful and to do it right. And it's not necessarily an easy job. I mean, he's not risking his life there, but it is annoying. It's tough. It's not easy. Well, but there's a right way to do it, and there's a one where you pick up a young teenage girl and body slam her. Mm-hmm. I mean, God knows what could have happened there.
She could have suffered a serious concussion. You know, she could have broken a bone. She could have broken her back. I mean, body slamming 100-pound 15-year-old girl doesn't really make a lot of sense in that situation. And the argument is, well, you know, it's a snap judgment. You're in the middle of something and you have to make a decision immediately. And so it's hard to say that someone should or shouldn't act a certain way. But I just feel like if he had the ability to restrain her in holding her and carrying her up before the body slam, then he could have like restrained her and not body slammed her if he felt like she was adding more chaos to the situation, which again, she claims she didn't. She claims that she got involved because she wanted to break up the fight. But look, this is how the case ended, and I'm actually not surprised at all. I knew that he wasn't going to face any charges, regardless of the surveillance. That's why body cameras on police officials is not going to solve anything. We have video surveillance of people literally running away from cops as they get shot in the back, and then there's no justice served in those cases. What makes anyone think that body cameras are going to solve anything?
So, look, I think it's a much better step than not having the body cameras.
Sure.
Because if there was no video of this, they would have dismissed this out of hand immediately. Your word versus the cop. The cop is almighty. Of course, we're not going to believe you, etc. So I'm not surprised either. But at least in this case, there was a letter of resignation that he handed in last Thursday, 2 months after the incident. Of course, after a world of pressure. So at least he did resign. Look, and it's not about one particular cop. So in this case, you know, you got to look at the entirety of his career. I'm not saying, oh, we had to lock him up for X period of time. I don't know. That's a call for the system to make, and unfortunately, oftentimes, of course, when it comes to cops, they're like, not guilty, we're done with it. But what I care more about is training them right so that they show restraint. Hey, if you're in the middle of a fight with some young girls there, boy, that's tough. But guys, remember, they're young girls, they don't weigh that much, or even young boys, of course, right? We have got to show restraint. But cops in our country, far too often, unfortunately, are not taught that restraint. And then we go blame them afterwards. And I think that in some cases we're very, very right about that. But what I want to do is fix the underlying problem, which is train them right.
Right. And maybe don't rely on having police officers on campuses. I don't know. We didn't have cops on my high school campus, and we did just fine. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, but
it
that's
criminalizes
a whole different.
The students. Yeah, I agree with you. It's totally counterproductive.
Yeah.
Now, if you thought that story was bad, and it is bad, wait till you get a load of the next two stories.
Yes. All right. Guards from Florida's Dade Correctional Institution will not face any charges after an inmate died after being locked in a scalding hot shower for 2 hours. Now, Darren Rainey was the inmate who died, and he did suffer from schizophrenia. Apparently, he has been imprisoned since June of 2012 on a cocaine possession conviction. So he's in there for possessing coke. That's
wow.
It. Okay. So he does suffer from schizophrenia, and apparently he had soiled himself. And as a punishment, the guards decided to put him in a shower and lock him there for 2 hours. Now, those guards won't face charges, and I'll tell you why in just a second.
No,
but
course.
First, let me fill some of the details in for you. So Darren Rainey, an inmate at the Dade Correctional Institution in South Florida, was serving a prison sentence for cocaine possession in June of 2012 when guards took him out of his cell, forced him into a shower stall, and locked the door. They turned the water on scalding hot, possibly as high as 180 degrees, then walked away. Rainey, a 50-year-old with schizophrenia, could be heard screaming, "I can't take it anymore," a fellow inmate would later say. Now, to clarify something, that graphic mentioned that the temperature could have been as high as 180 degrees. That was reported by The New Yorker, but an investigation found that the temperature in the shower went up to 160 degrees. Okay, so it's still insanely hot and can do serious damage to someone. But the prosecutors argue that there was no evidence that the shower was that hot, just that the shower can get that hot.
Okay, so let me further clarify. Mm-hmm. That 160 degree reading was taken 2 days after the guy died. So they had an opportunity to turn down the temperature. Okay, so we don't know if it was always set at 160 or they turned it down to 160. Now remember, they killed someone there. That's my opinion, apparently not the opinion of the prosecutors who are like, oh, that was great. He just magically died in that shower. I don't know how he died. You have no evidence. I have the evidence that he's dead. Anyway, I'll get to that in a second. So 160 degrees, which by the way is, even if you just take that temperature, is 40 degrees hotter than water allowed by state laws. They say if you get to 120, that is scalding hot, and you're not allowed to have it that hot because it will burn human beings. At a minimum, they had at 160 degrees, 40 degrees hotter than that. You could brew tea in that kind of temperature. And then they left them in there for hours and hours. And one of their excuses was, we would come back every half an hour and check. Which we'll check to see if he's dead yet. Oh, he's not dead yet. Let's leave him in there for longer and let's come back later. So I think that there is, other than the cops, there's a real villain in this story.
Yeah, it's the guards. It's the guards there who wanted to punish him because he had defecated on himself. But according to the Washington Post.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
They're huge, huge villains, the guards I'm talking about. But the one I'm mainly referring to is the Miami-Dade state attorney, Catherine Fernandez Rundle, who said she cleared all four guards. And she said there's no evidence of wrongdoing.
It's insane.
No evidence of wrongdoing? No evidence of wrongdoing. The guy's skin burned, melted off of him.
So let me give you more details on that. So the Washington Post reported on this as well. Derek Hawkins writes, skin had reddened and begun to peel off, flecks of it floating next to him. A sweeping investigation by the Miami Herald, which reported that Dade corrections officers had rigged the shower to punish inmates who misbehaved. So apparently this was a systemic thing. This happened regularly. The paper also reported that Dade guards would douse inmates with chemicals, starve them, and force them to fight.
I see no evidence. I see, if I'm going to say the guards are always right and the cops are always right and the system is always right, I see no evidence. If I don't look for evidence, I won't see it. I think Catherine Fernandez Rundle should immediately be fired by her voters in the very next election. I mean, so because these prosecutors, they're friends with the cops, they work with the cops, they work with them every single day. We can't have the local prosecutors prosecuting the local cops or guards, okay? We've got to have a federal body doing it. We got to fix the system overall. And for her to turn around and say, "Oh, yeah, yeah, my friends here in power." I see no evidence. I mean, even though paper after paper reports the dousing with the chemicals, the torture, and they burn this guy alive, and he is dead.
He's dead.
I don't see any evidence.
No, what's crazy is that, you know, of course, they have to find excuses for why he died. They have to make some sort of justification and place the blame on him rather than the guards who put him there, right? And so let's go to graphic 10. Rainey, the report said, died of a combination of factors, including complications of his schizophrenia, an undiagnosed heart disease and confinement in a shower. No, he died because you locked him in a shower with scalding hot water for 2 hours straight and completely ignored his cries for help. That's exactly what happened. Someone's skin doesn't just like peel off on its own just because they're in the shower. It doesn't work that way unless the shower is incredibly hot. How do you sit there and allow someone to die in such a torturous way, even if you have no empathy for inmates whatsoever? This was not a violent criminal. This was someone who suffered from schizophrenia and was imprisoned for cocaine possession. Cocaine possession. How many white Americans are addicted to heroin right now and are overdosing or ruining their lives because they're addicted to it, right? Do we criminalize them? Of course we don't criminalize them. We treat them with empathy because they have a problem and they need help. But when it comes to this case, oh, hell no, it's a black schizophrenic man. Let's put him in prison and torture him to death because he had cocaine possession.
So let me break it down excuse by excuse. First of all, what the doctors describe what happened to skin as a condition called slippage, when your skin slips off of you because you're basically being boiled alive. Now, their excuse for that was, well, when the medics were moving him, then his skin might have fallen off then. And why do you think his skin would fall off then when the medics were moving him? Maybe because you put him in scalding hot water for 2 hours. The prosecutor wrote, the evidence fails to show that any correctional officer acted in reckless disregard of Rainey's life. None of them showed any recklessness, not even murder, not homicide, any recklessness as they boiled him alive for 2 hours and he's screaming according to the other inmates. Quote, I can't take it no more. I'm sorry, I won't do it again. I can't take it, I can't take it, I can't take it. And they would check back with him every half an hour to see if he was dead or not. And at the end they came back, they're like, oh, he is dead. So, but there's no recklessness there. That's just what, is that what normal guards are doing in South Florida? Because we ought to know. If your prosecutors in Miami-Dade are saying, yeah, it doesn't matter what the charge is. This is cocaine possession, it could have been marijuana possession. It doesn't matter, you wind up in a Miami-Dade prison and your life is in danger and we celebrate it. We say, oh yeah, we'll do whatever we want to you, and then we'll have a prosecutor who's our friend tell us that she sees no recklessness at all. Yeah. Now, the three things that he could have died from. So one is the schizophrenia. I'm not a doctor, I'm not going to get into how you could or couldn't die from schizophrenia alone. I don't even know what that means. Okay, but let's talk about the schizophrenia as to what got him in there. Now, if you're in the audience and you're thinking, man, this guy smeared the feces all over, I wouldn't want to deal with that if I'm a cop. I hear you. But might that not show that he's not mentally healthy? Mm-hmm. Like, wouldn't a person who has like one degree of empathy go, oh Jesus, this guy's obviously sick? And we have to have a system to deal with people who are sick, because he's not the only guy who's schizophrenic or has other mental issues that are in prison. A lot of people wind up in prison because they have those issues in the first place. So now we can have trained nurses deal with them. They do that in other situations. Or we can say, let's torture him and see every once in a while if we've murdered him yet, because he inconvenienced me with his illness. And then later, I'll blame that illness on him and say, well, he died because of his illness. An undiagnosed heart condition, almost in every cop report after they kill someone, it could have been a heart condition, it could have been undiagnosed, it could have led to the death, it could have been. Now, do you think that even if he had an undiagnosed heart condition, it might have been triggered by the fact that you boil him alive for 2 hours? Might that have been a contributing factor? And then finally, they're decent enough to say confinement in the shower might have played a role, but no one's guilty of anything. The guards are perfectly free to go. And so now you know, even if the smallest crime there is, you wind up in a Miami-Dade prison, they can murder you, boil you alive, torture you, and the prosecutors aren't going to do a damn thing to them, because they don't serve you, they don't serve the citizens, they serve the people in power.
And it not only serves as an injustice for the victim in this case, it will be an injustice for anyone who is under the watch of these guards at this correctional center. Because this not only emboldens them, it puts the lives, other inmates' lives at risk. And so look, I get it. There are Americans out there who don't care about the lives of these inmates, right? They don't actually look at the correctional system as a way of rehabilitating people. But think about how many people aren't in prison right now who enjoy drugs like marijuana or cocaine. Are they violent criminals? Do they deserve to be in prison? Do they deserve to have their lives taken by these guards? Okay, think about all the people out there who have mental illnesses that go untreated because they don't have the resources to treat them. And if they commit a crime, regardless of how violent or nonviolent it is, they could end up in prison and be treated like this and have their lives taken from them. That's the country that we live in right now. Land of the free, country that imprisons more people than any other country in the world.
If you have power, it's a great country for you. If you don't, watch out. One of the inmates said that when they looked at him at the end, he looked like a boiled lobster. And every sentence in this report, not literally, but it certainly appears that way from the look at it that you get here, talks about how the evidence fails to show that any correctional officer acted with disregard, right? It's not substantiated that the temperatures inside the shower room were excessively high. Well, if you want to let him off, you can say, well, there was no one there to measure the temperature at the time. Ha ha, you couldn't prove it. But you're supposed to be the prosecutor, not the defense attorney. And so you then turn around and you've got all the people saying he was screaming, I can't take it anymore. I can't take it anymore. It looks like a boiled lobster. His skin had peeled off from how hot it was. You know that the temperature could be turned up to 160 degrees. So it's 40 degrees above the standards. All these things where you go, well, I'm acting as his defense attorney instead of the prosecutor, and no one who is acting on his behalf. And so I'm just going to let them off because you couldn't prove beyond any doubt at all that these guys did it with 100% certainty. So sad day for you, we win, you lose. It's gross, it's gross, it's gross.
All right.
By the way, it's just one last thing. I talk about beyond any doubt, right? The standard is beyond a reasonable doubt. That's in a trial. They're not going to trial.
Exactly.
They're not.
Why can't they go to trial? Why can't
that is not the standard on whether you bring them to trial or not. But if you don't want to bring them to trial, then you make any goddamn excuse you like to make sure they don't go to trial.
That's right. All right. The family of a veteran who died in a jail cell while he was paralyzed without food and water will receive a $10 million reward from Oklahoma. Now, this is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's not really a reward. A jury has decided to reward the family of the victim this amount of money because of wrongdoing. So apparently this involved an inmate by the name of Elliot Williams. He had a mental breakdown after his wife had left him, and cops responded and arrested him as a result. Now, at some point after they arrested him, he broke his neck. But I will be clear that it's unclear how he broke his neck. He had a mental breakdown. There were people who had testified that he, you know, banged himself against the wall, so he could have hurt himself. But again, we don't know for sure. But what we do know is that he was paralyzed, he was in pain, and he was denied any medical attention as a result of that. In fact, they had put him in a room with surveillance footage just to prove that he was gonna move and that he was faking it, but the surveillance footage proved that he wasn't faking it. He didn't move for 51 hours straight and then eventually died. Okay, so let me give you some more details on that.
Let me just jump in for one quick second, Anna. So very true that this is unlike some other cases we've covered where you don't know how the guy broke his neck in the first place. But what is indisputable is that they left him in there for 51 hours as he was begging for food and water. Part of the reason he died was dehydration. Mm-hmm. So now this is the second person we've talked about who might have died because of thirst in prison in America. You know, how barbaric have we become? Where we, and look, I get it, man. Sometimes prisoners complain about things that aren't true. And sometimes their neck is broken, so you might want to check. And if you didn't check in the first hour, you might want to check in hour 49. Instead, they left the food just out of his reach and the water just out of his reach as he sat in his feces and urine, and they laughed at him.
Yep. Footage showed a paralyzed Williams laying naked on his back and grasping for food and water that detention officers dropped out of his reach. So here is a photo. You don't see him naked, but there's a photo of what it looked like. Jail employees believed Williams was faking paralysis despite his pleas for help, and they placed him in a video monitored cell to catch him moving. Williams was left suffering in a cell covered in feces and urine, suffocating as his lungs began to collapse slowly over the course of several days, unable to feed himself, unable to drink, begging for water and begging for help that never came. So there was wrongdoing here, and that's the reason why the jury decided to give his family the $10 million. However, the part that should enrage everyone is that no criminal charges were filed against anyone in this case. Okay. Yeah.
So, yet again, for the 1,000th time in a row, local prosecutors side with local cops and guards and sheriff's offices, and they say, I can't say what the sheriff's office did wrong. Now, if you thought he was faking the paralysis, in hour one, hour two, did you really think he was faking it in hour 47? He's like the world's greatest actor. You have him in a video monitor room. He hasn't moved for 47 hours. And you think, no. He appears to be saying that he's dying of thirst and he's paralyzed. But nope, 47 hours, he still hasn't moved. But I don't care. 48 hours, don't care. 49 hours, don't care. 50 hours, don't care. 51 hours, oh, he's dead. Who cares? But no, you can't charge people in power. Jail is for people who don't have power. You know what he was in on? Misdemeanor obstruction. By the way, he also had a mental issue. This is a story we see over and over again. Mm-hmm. I don't know how severe it was, but when they went to go corral him, he didn't comply with those orders because he didn't understand the orders. Maybe he had issues because he was a veteran and he was going, I don't know, right? But they charged him with misdemeanor obstruction. Instead of helping him,
right,
they brought him into prison. Then he snaps his neck and they let him die there for 51 hours. But so the misdemeanor obstruction is worth taking your life over, but letting a man die there right in front of your eyes, no charges. Not even a misdemeanor. By the way, the lawyer in this case for the sheriff is so despicable. The sheriff is despicable. Not only did he do this, he used to classify the white inmates and black inmates with W and N. W stood for white. You want to guess what N stood for? Now, he says it stood for Negroid, and he defends it. He says,
He completely defends it. Sheriff Glanz is his name, testified that he was okay with deputies calling black suspects Negroids and Negroids. One detention officer recorded two checks for every one she made for Williams. That's a completely different part of the story. So basically, they falsified records. There was evidence that people working at that jail or that prison were completely falsifying records, pretending like they were checking in on him, when in reality, evidence showed that they weren't checking in on him at all. But again, that's another part of the story. Let's focus on the sheriff and how he's completely transparent about the fact that he was a racist prick.
Yeah, he says, well, in the 60s and 70s, that's what they used to call them. Yeah, but we don't do that anymore. You know, in the 1860s and 70s, they had a different name too. Should we keep calling him that? His answer would probably be yes. Mm-hmm. Now, Brewster is this guy's defense attorney, and defense attorney's got to defend him. I get that. That's how our legal system works. But this defense attorney went above and beyond. He said, I'm proud to represent Stanley Glantz, who counsel has pointed out is a friend. I truly love the man. I'll stand there right beside him. This guy who calls people Negroids and lets them die in their prisons. I love him. And defense counsel has every right and obligation to defend him. He doesn't have to say he loves that guy. He went on to say, so I guess the issue for counsel, the people who were suing, is that somehow after he became paralyzed, and we believed it was a psychological situation. Your neck is snapped, but apparently some sort of psychological situation, instead of a medical one, suddenly we should have second guessed the doctors and did something differently. Not suddenly, in hour 49, not suddenly, okay? And he says, we weren't deliberately indifferent to him. How long would it have taken before you were deliberately indifferent to him? Mm-hmm. 52 hours, 53 hours? So these guys revel in this. This happens all the time. Just because you don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. So there's a lot of people in this country who are like, I never got my neck snapped in jail for a misdemeanor. They never let me, you know, die of dehydration and have my lungs collapse and let me die in my own urine and feces. It didn't happen to me, so I don't care. I don't care. And I'll just say they're whining. He's not whining. He's dead. He's dead. And by the way, the jury said yes. They were right. The family was right. The sheriff is wrong. The sheriff, by the way, has to pay $250,000. Okay? I don't care about the fine. I don't care about that. I want him to go to prison. Same thing with the sheriff in Milwaukee. Let a guy die of thirst. How is he not in prison? How is that not neglect? How is that not reckless? He let a baby die because they wouldn't treat it. This is the sheriff in Milwaukee. They wouldn't treat a woman who was going through birth. Oh, she's just complaining and whining. She's going through birth. What happened? I thought you conservatives were pro-life. And they let the baby die because they wouldn't treat him. How is that not neglect? How is that not reckless? But if you're in power, and my God, God help you if you're in a prison. Because we as a society have become animals. And as soon as somebody steps inside the prison, they're not human anymore. And we treat them any way we like, especially in places in this country. And yes, they exist. It's right here in this story. If you're labeled a Negroid, and then people say, oh, what do black people complain about? Well, if this happened to you, my guess, or it happened to your brother, or it happened to your father, you might complain as well. If they left him to die there in his own waste. Jesus Christ. People have no compassion. No compassion at all. We have to improve and fix these jails and these prisons because they're a monstrosity. And it's a shame upon all of us that this is the system that we have and nobody ever gets punished. He was in there for a misdemeanor, but
he's a vet. I mean, he was a vet. And that's part of it that further enrages me, because veterans are used as political tools during campaigns. They're not individuals that these politicians genuinely care about. If you genuinely care about our vets, you would be just as enraged about this story, right?
If you care about their lives. He's dead because he was in for a misdemeanor. But the people who let him die there for 51 hours, they won't even get charged.
No charges.
Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. Old Turk writes in, dead body, that's my evidence. Susan writes in, the medical examiner and the county attorney should have to endure that shower and then say he wasn't tortured. Marcos Granger says, this story proves how this systematic issue of murder and torture from the guards up to the judge. Look, I've talked about it before. I didn't want to repeat it too much. I'll just touch on it real quick. The Stanford Prison Experiment. We know what happens when you make people guards and make people prisoners. It's human nature. The guards become vicious and they abuse the prisoners to no end. It happens immediately. It happens no matter what the situation is, even when it's Stanford students and they know they're in an experiment. Mm-hmm. Smart, educated kids in the full with the full knowledge that it's an experiment, immediately, not a month later, within the day, become vicious monsters. And yet we ignore all that evidence and we just let guards across this country rip prisoners apart and then let them off the hook.
Yep.
It's fucking gross. Anyway, okay. Members of the day are Alexander Platts and Mike Biebrick. In the post game, I'm going to go back into the two topics that have set me off today, the injustice system and NBC News coverage of progressives. So tytnetwork.com/join, and members make this show possible. And like I said, there's only 40 days left before the journalism drive is over. And every day I read the names of the people who've given money, and we appreciate every single dollar because it means a lot to you and it means a lot to us. $15 from Cody in North Carolina, $127 from Mitch in Colorado, and $100 from Aravinda in California. Wow, look at that, 1.481. It is, in fact, my birthday today. Maybe we could talk about that in the post.
Yay, happy birthday.
Thank you. Give the gift of journalism, not to me, but to the country.
We should at least briefly talk about your birthday in the postgame, because I asked Cenk if he's going to do anything fun, and his answer was so depressing. So, and it just shows you what adulthood is really like. It's just one big nonstop depression fest.
I'm a pessimist here. By the way, despite all these horrific stories, I'm still, as you guys, if you watch the show regularly, know, an enormous optimist. Mm-hmm. So, but we will talk about what did you call it? Adulting?
Adulting, yeah. Yes.
Whatever that means, we'll talk about that in the post game too.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
All right. Spring breakers in Cancun, Mexico decided it would be a great idea to go on a little pirate ship tourist attraction and chant "Build That Wall," showing just how ugly Americans can really be, even when they go to other countries that include individuals that they want to block from the United States. So apparently there have been a number of people who work in Cancun and the tourist industry in Mexico complaining about similar incidents. But recently there was a Peruvian gentleman who was on vacation in Cancun who shared his experience of this on Facebook. And he's like, you know what, enough's enough. All right, I'm going to share what I experienced and I'm going to speak out against it. So he wrote, today I was with Suli, my wife, who is a native of Mexico, watching an entertainment show off the coast of Cancun aboard a boat. And at the end of the show, a flock of Americans, maybe under the influence of alcohol or maybe not, maybe yes, began to sing the infamous "Build That Wall" chant louder and louder. Okay, so you idiots, you're in Mexico. So how about get the fuck out? And if you don't like it, then don't spend any time in the country that you assume all the criminals come from.
Okay, yeah, if you think the criminals and rapists come from there, why did you go? Second of all, if they build a wall, then you won't be able to get out.
Oh God, it's like, it's one of the most embarrassing times to be an American. Am I allowed to say that? I know, people lose their minds when they say it. It's embarrassing. This kind of stuff is incredibly embarrassing. You're in Mexico right now talking about building that wall. You're in this beautiful, beautiful place, and you have the freaking audacity to insult locals there with this garbage.
Because they're so cool and they're so hip and they're so tough. So look, I don't condone violence, but I do hope that the next time they do that chant, they should just do it in the middle of Tijuana. You never know, man. It could go over really, really well. Just get it. Oh, you're on a cruise. That's so cute. Oh, you're so tough with all your shirts off and chugging beers or whatever the fuck you're doing.
They should do it at Sinaloa.
Yeah, go to Sinaloa. Chant, build that wall. See how it turns out. But you know why I say that? Because I know how tough you are. I'm not the one claiming to be tough. They're the ones, yeah, build that wall, man. Trump, build that wall, yeah. Say it, go ahead, say it in the middle of Mexicans. Don't say it safely on a cruise. Because I know you frat boys are super, super tough. So go out there in your, you know, shorts, mm-hmm, and no shirt at all, and because, you know, and get out there and chant it in the middle of Mexico.
Yeah.
Okay, so go to Sinaloa. Because I know you're tough. I know you're super tough. Okay?
You know, what's amazing?
I bet you could pull it off.
What's amazing to me is, like, how incredibly dumb these people are. So I don't know what percentage of them know that they're in Mexico. Like, maybe they think Cancun is its own country. I don't know. But
Well, right wingers are usually like unbelievably record-breaking lack of intelligence. So, because you know, the next guy to build that wall, right? So it's not exactly an intellectual argument. I know. A lot of them are thinking, I'm just having fun, man. I'm drunk, right?
Yeah.
But think about how offensive it is. And they're like, oh, what are you, a special snowflake? Okay, again, say it in the middle of Sinaloa. Let's see who's this fucking snowflake then, right? Okay, then all of a sudden you're not going to be so tough, right? So the reason I'm pissed about it, one, you should all be pissed about it because we should actually empathize with people, with fellow human beings. Mm-hmm. And Mexicans are, yes, just as human as Americans. I know for right wingers, that blows their mind. They're like, no, I am best.
Yeah.
My ugly chants are directed at these inferior people. I get it.
I mean, I know Mexicans that are more human than some Americans I know, so let's just keep it 100 there too.
Of course. Okay. So now it's because it's based on your actions. Okay?
Exactly.
So, but I will add an extra layer because that guy, the Peruvian guy, is what set me off. Mm-hmm. Because if they're doing a racist chant against my wife, for example, who's Chinese, mm-hmm. and my kids are Chinese. So, look, man, you think you're so fucking tough and you're so cool, but you've never faced any real challenges. You're entitled little pricks who go and pick on people with less power and less wealth than you, and you think you're tough. You haven't done a goddamn thing with your life. All you've done is get drunk and act like an asshole and disgrace the rest of us.
You know what's interesting though? There's an individual who has more wealth and more power than they do who is currently picking on them right now. So Trump just did away with what little protection student borrowers had under the Obama administration. He essentially said, oh, this protection that would bar collectors from tacking on these exorbitant fees onto your student loans, doing away with that protection, right? How many of those people in Mexico chanting in favor of Donald Trump's BS are in student loan debt right now and will be completely screwed in the future because of Donald Trump, right? Like, they're just so dumb. They're so dumb. And that's my biggest problem with Americans. And they get, talk about special little snowflakes. You call Trump supporters dumb and they lose it, right?
Oh, yeah.
But God, what do you think you are? You think you're smart? Look at what his budget proposal is. Look at what he told Tucker Carlson when Tucker Carlson pointed out that his policies will directly negatively impact the counties that voted for him. And he said, oh yeah, I know. You're dumb. You're not smart, right? This is not me having a temper tantrum. This is me frustrated because you were conned. And as a result, we all have to pay the consequences of that.
Yeah. No, they could do racist chants all day long in other people's countries. But if you say, hey, maybe you're not that bright, they're like, oh my God, you've hurt my feelings. I'm a special little bitch and you have hurt my feelings. How dare you, you liberal? You've cucked me. How dare you? I am offended. Well, sad day for you. Try to get an education. Learn some facts in your life. And if you weren't so dumb, then I wouldn't be forced to call you what you are. So if you're going to go cry about it, go cry in a corner, bitch.
Wow, that was great. Okay, moving on. A student from Brooklyn, New York has pleaded not guilty in a case involving assault where she allegedly assaulted a basketball player from Massachusetts over the issue of cultural appropriation. The story is insane and it enrages me. So Carmen Figueroa is the name of the suspect here and she will have to return to court and face an investigation over this. But again, she pleaded not guilty. Apparently there was a basketball game, college basketball game, taking place in Massachusetts. And the players from Massachusetts had braids in their hair. And Carmen Figueroa was outraged about it and so she took action. She confronted members of the Central Maine Community College women's basketball team, demanding that they remove the braids from their hair, allegedly citing, per court documents, cultural appropriation. And then when they refused to do so, she alleged to have, according to the Gazette, attacked one of the students, a second Hampshire student who is yet identified, is alleged to have pulled the hair of another player, causing her to fall. Figueroa then allegedly kicked and stepped on the fallen player. Okay.
What are you doing?
This is so stupid.
So to clarify, the home team is from Massachusetts, the visiting team is from Maine. Carmen Figueroa is 20 years old. I mean, she's not 14. You're 20. You should be an adult by then. So this cultural appropriation happened. Yes. Is it deeply frustrating when people will sometimes be sent home from school, African Americans will, because they've got cornrows or they got braids or they got an afro and they say, no, clean up your hair. What does that mean, clean up your hair? So if you're mad about that, you're 100% right. Okay? Mm-hmm. Making your hair look more white is not cleaning it up. It's not any more presentable. Okay? Now, at the same time, what is the point of Italian people who are emulating you? So if those people who are emulating you then discriminated against you, then I'm going to be on your side, although not on the violence. Okay?
Yeah.
But in this case, you have no evidence at all that they were discriminating against. For all you know, likely they did the cultural appropriation because they liked your style. So you don't have to beat them up over it.
Yeah, so I think that it's misdirected anger, and I get where the anger comes from, because you'll have one group of people who do something and they get criticized for it. Then you'll have another group of people do the exact same thing and they're celebrated for it, right? So the afro. If a black woman goes to work sporting an afro, or she applies for a job and goes to an interview sporting an afro, she's likely going to get punished for it, right? If a woman does something similar, a white woman does something similar, she's so edgy. You know, so fashionable, so this, so that. So I get that frustration. But the frustration and the anger needs to be directed at, you know, a cultural issue we have, not the individuals who celebrate the certain style that your culture has brought to the table. By the way, we appropriate everything. Everyone's appropriating everyone up in here. Like, it's just the truth. It is. Like, so Mara Hoffman is a fashion designer that I really like, right? Insanely expensive fashion designer that I can't afford, but I really admire her clothing. And there was this big thing about how her clothes are guilty of cultural appropriation. No, her clothes are beautiful, and if anything, it's celebrating certain cultures, which I'm not even buying, by the way, that it's cultural appropriation. You're not supposed to be angry at people who celebrate culture. You're supposed to be angry at people who create double standards that celebrate culture with some people and then criticize culture with other people. And this is not how you do it. When stories like this make headlines, it makes any argument, you know, about cultural appropriation seem ridiculous, and we don't want that.
You've delegitimized your own issue by doing this. You didn't intend to, but you did. Second of all, assault is assault, so you should be charged. And then third of all, I just don't agree. I think appropriation, again, if not done in a discriminatory way, is fine. So, okay, I'm Turkish. They've appropriated baklava and gyros and kebab. Great. So what? That means they like them. That means it's tasty. Okay. So I know a lot of people will say, oh, no, you're being too dismissive. And I understand the history of what's happened in this country. When black people did rock and roll, they were shucking and jiving. But when white people did it, isn't Elvis so cool? I get it, guys. I get it. And we're 100% against that. Okay. But if somebody is trying to copy you because they think it's cool, that's not such a bad thing. It really isn't. Don't assault people over it. That's madness.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the story that I briefly talked about earlier, but want to give you more details on. The Trump administration has officially rolled back protections for people who have defaulted on student loans. Just another piece of evidence showing how he plans on making America great again. Now, this type of protection affected about 7 million borrowers who were part of a federal program that was discontinued back in 2010. Now, Trump's administration revoked federal guidance that barred student debt collectors from charging high fees on these past due loans. So it's just like any other type of loan, right? If you default on it, it goes to collection, and then the collection agency will try to collect that money, obviously, but they can add additional interest and fees to it, which makes it even more unmanageable. And so the Obama administration came in a few years ago and decided, maybe it's not a good idea to further punish people who can't pay back their student loan debt by adding these ridiculous fees, right? We want to make it possible for them to pay it back, and it becomes even more difficult to pay back if they can't afford these fees. Now, the Education Department is ordering guarantee agencies that collect debt on defaulted debt to disregard a memo former President Barack Obama's administration had issued that forbid the agencies from charging fees for up to 16% of the principal and incurred occurred interest owed on the loans if the borrower entered the government's loan rehabilitation program within 60 days of default. Okay, that is such a small protection, but still, it was a protection. And Trump's administration gratuitously came in and snatched it away. Why? I don't understand.
Well, so there's two theories on this. One is a simple one, which is, well, they need $54 billion in extra defense spending, so they have to cut everywhere to the bone. So if they have to be more vicious to American kids who are trying to get an education, live the American dream, well, Lockheed Martin had to get paid, Anna. I mean,
But the only people, I looked into this because I was curious. I'm like, why would Trump do this? I mean, it's just, again, it seems gratuitous, right? But the only people who profit off of these fees are the collectors themselves, okay? That's it. That money goes to the collectors. And look, it's not like other debt where you go into bankruptcy and you get rid of that debt. It's student loan debt. It follows you for the rest of your life. So the second these students make a paycheck or earn any income, these debt collectors garnish the wages, right? And they add on the extra fees, which makes it even more difficult to pay off. That not only affects the students, it affects everyone in this country. You can't stimulate an economy without a robust middle class, and we don't have that right now.
They don't care.
It's going to fuck everyone over. You guys don't understand how bad this is. This is so bad.
Okay, so the collectors are business. Business is always right. The average American is always wrong. The average American must be crushed because business is always right. I don't know to what degree they've donated to the Republican Party, but I would tender a guess that they probably have. That probably has something to do with it. And the average American doesn't donate enough to politicians. So sad day for you, you don't get represented. And that's how this corrupt system works. Now, the second possibility as to why they do it is something I've had trouble accepting. I still have trouble accepting it to this day. But I think that people don't think like I do. Some people are malicious, and they think it's a zero-sum game. They view the world in this Darwinian way, where, and yes, back in the day when we were fighting against the lions and the bears and we were cavemen, it was literally Darwinian. This day, it's not a zero-sum game. We could all win if the arrangement is right. But they don't view it that way, and they think, I already made it. I got to kick the ladder down so nobody else makes it. Mike, I want me to have an advantage. I want my kids to have an advantage. I want my tribe to have an advantage. And these kids, if they're going to get crushed by the collectors, good. Then they don't have as much opportunity as me. Okay? Now, I can't fathom that. So I tend to think that's probably this less likely alternative. But people think in different ways. They really do. I mean, Mitt Romney, Donald Trump, it's partly their bubble, right? Mitt Romney said, well, why don't you just ask your parents for a giant loan? Like, why don't you just get $250,000 from your parents, Anna? And start a business. Because in his bubble, it's like, that's what I would do. That's what I did. My parents just handed me tens of millions of dollars, and then I started businesses. Aren't I a genius? Donald Trump got handed $200 million. And he thinks, well, why doesn't your daddy give you $200 million? So business, collectors, of course, I'm going to favor them over these goddamn students.
This is insane. This is insane. And you know, my mind keeps going back to the primaries, when we were having debates about the education policy that Bernie Sanders wanted to roll out versus the education policy that Hillary Clinton wanted to roll out. And, you know, we were nitpicking because we wanted the best of the best. We got the worst. We got the absolute worst. Right now, there are about 8 million Americans who are defaulting on their student loan debt to the tune of $137 billion. Okay. Half of those loans are from the program that will be affected by Trump's withdrawal of Obama's memo. They're known as FFEL loans, and it was, again, a program that was discontinued back in 2010. The federal government had subsidized and insured loans that were given by private companies, right?
So first of all, you got to cut out the middleman. If the government is insuring it, even if you're a conservative, why are we paying the middleman? It just increases the cost for us. And then finally, think about it, man. Look at how the powerful have structured society. The one debt you cannot get rid of is a debt that would get you an education and allow you to live the American dream. If you're a giant bank that destroyed the global economy, oh, you can get rid of that debt, no problem. In fact, the taxpayers will pick it up for you. You get every advantage, even though you're the most culpable. The people looking for the American dream, the least culpable, the ones we should help the most, are the ones we crush the most. You will never, never get rid of that debt. It will be an albatross around your neck, because the powerful set up the system to favor them, and to make sure that you never get up. And then they wonder The Democratic Party wonders, the Republican Party wonders, their friends in the mainstream media wonders. What are you guys all upset about? And then Bernie Sanders proposes $75 billion for free education at the state college level. And they go, oh, they're so unrealistic. So unrealistic to actually care about Americans and their kids. Now Trump puts $54 billion extra into spending. It's already got nearly $700 billion in spending. Yep. But that's not unrealistic. That's awesome. Bailouts are awesome. Defense contractor spending is awesome. The powerful are awesome. The powerless will get further crushed. And what are you guys complaining about? I can't quite figure it out. I work in the mainstream media. I'm a multimillionaire. I can't figure out what you guys are complaining about.
It's so depressing. And I don't know. I don't know what else to say about this.
Okay. Let's do the last story and on a fun note.
All right. Last story is that a study indicates that America sucks and Norway rocks. Okay. This is a UN report. And what they did is they looked at the quality of life of 155 countries and they realized America's not number one. In fact, it's number 14. But at number one is Norway, which did unseat Denmark as the world's happiest country. Now, the Nordic nations are the most content, according to the World Happiness Report in 2017, produced by the Sustainable Development Solutions Network, a global initiative launched by the UN in 2012. So countries in sub-Saharan Africa, along with Syria and Yemen, are the least happy of the 155 countries ranked. Denmark, Iceland, Switzerland, Finland, Netherlands, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and Sweden rounded up the top 10 countries. So those are the happiest places on earth.
Well, I do see one thing that unites them, socialism. But we are told that socialism is the boogeyman. It might actually make you happy. Now, I've said this 1,000 times on the show. I'm a capitalist. I'm a small business owner. I believe in competition. But apparently, they're doing something right in the socialist countries. So their rate of taxation in those countries are astronomical. Mm-hmm. I, as an American, find them to be too high. But they're obviously doing something right. And unlike ideologues, I look at that and go, well, that is data. Those are facts. Those are interesting things to think about. So perhaps, I'm not saying we need to do exactly what they do and that everything they do is applicable to us, but perhaps we could learn a lesson or two from them.
Right. And I think Americans have a hard time looking at the high taxes in a country like Denmark, for instance, because when we think about taxes here in the United States, we think about waste and our money is wasted. I mean, think about how much of our money gets wasted on private contractors and needless wars as opposed to taking care of our own. But in these countries, they don't do that. They do tax at a high percentage, but that money goes back to the people. It goes back to the people with quality health care. It goes back to the people with free education. All of the things that put us in a tremendous amount of debt here in the United States are things that are readily available in these countries where they're extremely happy. And by the way, the only people who talk about healthcare in countries like Canada and how unhappy people are about it are American politicians who have a vested interest to make it seem as though healthcare sucks in Canada. How many Canadians are like weeping about how terrible healthcare is in their country?
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're about to lose 24 million more people from having health insurance because of Trump care. And so they've got a vested interest in making sure that you don't change the system because this is the system that made them powerful and rich. And they have no interest in sharing it with you, even if it makes us a happier country, because it isn't about the country, it isn't about the citizens, it's about them and their greed. So there is a way to do a proper balancing act here. And by the way, socialism really is, I think in a lot of ways, very misunderstood. It means that the private industry does a lot of things. They make jeans, they make hamburgers and sneakers, and that the government does a lot of things, including public education and yes, healthcare, because we don't want you to die in the street. So it's just a matter of where you draw that line. There isn't that much difference between capitalism and socialism. It's just a matter of which industries you think should be private and public. We're not talking about communism here. And apparently,
you need a mixed economy, man. You got to mix that economy up.
And every economy is mixed. Yeah. Our economy is mixed. Conservatives complain about big government. The biggest thing we have in the government is defense spending. It goes to the Pentagon. It goes to the defense contractors. So if you're going to complain about big government, you should complain about that. That's the largest chunk of the government. But that big government they love. So the reality is, if they've done it right, we shouldn't be so short-sighted. And yes, sometimes for the right wingers, stupid to think America's number one. We shouldn't learn anything. No, if America was number one, It's because we actually did learn things and we valued education, not because we shut off ourselves to the rest of the world. Okay, now we're way out of time. Okay, we will do a post game for you guys. It'll be a little bit more fun, although I think I still have a little bit of rage left in me.
Okay.
Okay, so that's at TYTnetwork.com/join. Bye-bye.